In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Here's Where It Went Wrong, the podcast where every week we have on one of our favorite comedians to talk about one of their favorite things in pop culture, history, and sports, and we trace its origins to figure out where it went completely off the rails. I am joined, as always, by my host, Andrew Nadeau. Andrew, how you doing, buddy?
It's been a week. Quick word that I promised everyone it'll just be a funny podcast because I think we could all use that right now. My father, Rich Nadeau, died unexpectedly of a heart attack last week. He was a great father in a lot of ways, but one of the most important was that he always believed in me, even in this rather risky career. He took me to my first comedy club when I was 15. He realized I was meant to do this and not medicine before I did and actually encouraged me to pursue it. I can't imagine he ever listened to a podcast before we made one, but he listened to ours. So, Pop, wherever you are, I love you. I miss you. Most importantly, thank you, because I don't believe I'd have any of this without you.
Yeah, really sorry for your loss there, Andrew. Just knowing how great you are, he did an amazing job.
Thank you very much. I'm glad. I know you got to meet him once when he flew up to see Spitfire. I wish you could say this episode is for you. It's you know, in honor of my father. Like, we cover your two favorite subjects, like inaccurate depictions of pirates in movies and anti-Semitic theme parks. This is the hardest I've ever seen one laugh. He laughed so hard his mic actually cut out and I could see this on video. But no, he was actually a big fan of history. When I talked about sports too, which I was not super into, but he was a big Red Sox fan and we dunk on them regularly. So I think we got it covered. We'll do an episode for him later. But today we had a great one planned that I thought we should go with.
Yeah. So today we are going to get into, and also I just want to step back. Yes, I remember the Spitfire show and I just remember the whole crowd. And that was one of those ones where we were just like, oh, we're doing a real comedy
right,
show.
Yeah. That was great. Was it anti-Semitic theme parks that got you? Was that it?
Yes. How was that not the line that was going to get me?
All right. I think that's our title.
So we are joined today by a cast member of The Quest We Can Do, as well as a writer and performer for Make It Up Media. She was one of the people that I have worked for her in the past. I'm a huge fan of hers. The ever funny Maggie Smith. Maggie, how are you?
Hello. Am I supposed to do a joke now?
Whatever you want. Jokes. If you also have an in memoriam that you want to break out, you know, whatever you want to do.
I'll just stick to the jokes today. And honestly, if I have the option, I would love to dive more into that anti-Semitic theme park. Just really tear it apart.
We've got a lot there. Oh, yeah. We're ready.
Yeah.
We're going to do our part. We're going to be banned from this place by the time this episode comes out.
I really hope not, because I just moved closer to it. And that's one of the reasons I moved to California.
So in case you haven't guessed, today we are diving into not just Disneyland, but specifically the Pirates of the Caribbean ride and films. Mm. So just by a show of stories, who here has been to Disneyland, Disney World? Who has ridden this ride?
Both Disneyland and a bit Disney World. I have ridden it.
I've done Disney World when I was a kid. I cannot remember if I've been on this. I can't imagine I skipped it, because it's the one ride where you just sit still for 15 minutes and your parents don't have to do anything. So I feel like that's the one that my parents would have definitely taken me on, but I don't really remember it.
Yeah, wow. Your parents definitely took you to the air-conditioned ride that's like 15 minutes of just sitting.
That and It's a Small World, just back and forth, just walk across the park to the two rides.
Right. And Wynn, what about you? Have you been on it?
Yes. I'm not fancy like Maggie here. I haven't done both.
Oh, you have to try. You have to try it, dear.
But I have done the Disney World one. And I absolutely love this ride.
Oh, yeah.
This was the last ride that Walt Disney actually worked on before he died. In like the 1950s, for some reason, like Walt Disney was a guy who would like wake up in the middle of the night with an idea and like jot it down on a piece of paper. And then for the rest of like the decade, everyone had to like abide by whatever he wrote on that piece of paper. Like one night he just woke up and wrote Pirates and was just like, that's the new ride, guys.
And that's it. When you start looking at the history, Walt Disney was what I can only describe as horny for pirates.
And you know what his lasting legacy is? Is he made us all horny for pirates.
He did. He went all in on this so hard. It's a decade of this. 1961, Mark Davis, who's a Disney animator with Snow White, began the initial concepts for what's going to become their most famous and most popular attraction, the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. It's another 7 years before it gets finished, but he wants to create a new expansion past Adventureland, a New Orleans attraction, which he sets in the 1850s, which again, I feel like it just wants pirates. And this is a way to do it. I'm sure he liked New Orleans too, but it's the pirates.
And just like a little fun fact, he paid more for that New Orleans expansion than America paid for New Orleans.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah. It was like way more. It's like 50 times more.
Like, yeah, I know inflation and everything, but it's really funny that Walt Disney spent more money on fake New Orleans than America spent on actual New Orleans.
I mean, Louisiana Purchase is easily America's best deal. Am I right, folks?
Oh, yeah. Even with the inflation, it's not far off. I mean, relative to what it is, by the way, because so much of the Louisiana Purchase is what we covered in the last episode. It's dead space in the middle of America where there's nothing there. So they basically said, look, if you want to buy New Orleans, you have to take this half of America. And we're like, okay, I guess we'll give you $1 million for it. And then Disney decides to make this his entire thing. He's going to spend the same amount of money to recreate a fake version of this one city.
And then he's just like, his brilliant idea is, I want to have a pirate museum, like a pirate wax museum, that everyone walks through. The end.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the initial idea. It was, yeah, supposed to just be like still Madame Tussauds, but they're pirates.
This is going to be taking place underground. You've got the city above, and then you've got the walkthrough underneath. This is the seedy underbelly. He wants to make it as literal as possible. But they come up with these developments in audio animatronic technology. By the way, when Wen and I started this podcast, neither of us knew how to edit. Our first 5 episodes, if we made a mistake, we had to start over.
Yes.
We did these straight through. Those were 1 hour, one take episodes. So these audio animatronics basically prevented that. They could adjust volume on the fly. They could have tracks saved and cut and paste and apply it to different robots. It allowed them to build this brand new advanced technology. Technology that has now been around for 50 years. When and I thought, let's just not make any mistakes ever. Instead of that route.
And to this day, we haven't once.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And I'm pretty sure the robots are slated to star in the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie. So that's kind of just the advanced in technology.
I mean, that's how you avoid COVID, is you just have a robot cast.
But wait, did we just come up with like a $1 million idea for Hollywood?
I mean, yeah, I would watch that.
Cowboy robots? Look, I was so invested in the cowboy robot show, and then I found out that was bad.
Are you talking about Westworld?
Yes, of course I'm talking about Westworld.
I watched a few episodes and I was like, ugh, I don't care about any of these people.
How is a show about robot cowboys fucking and fighting each other the most boring thing I've ever watched in television?
You know why? Because they don't take a second. They just need to take a second and be like, here's someone who you're supposed to care about. I'm just like, who's that guy? He's got glasses. He's like, dial it back, whatever. I don't know.
That show has like a piano, like an old timey piano cover of Runaway by Kanye West. And I'm like, how is this not the most fun I've ever had watching a TV show?
There's like Heart-Shaped Box, beautiful cover from that show. It's like, this should be a banger.
So basically these animatronics come along. They have the robot Lincoln in the Hall of Presidents. And pretty much it expands everything that Disney ever imagined for his parks. It was the Lincoln who's able to stand up and deliver a speech, mixed with the tiki birds, the most annoying birds in all of the world, of just the robot tiki hut.
And like racist.
So
I'm pretty
offensive.
Sure that isn't
They're
that.
Very racist.
It's like a super white guy doing a Mexican accent.
Like a Speedy Gonzales. accent, yeah, but it's made more real because you know Speedy Gonzales can't talk. You think the parrot could actually be this racist. It's possible.
Originally, they were just going to put a bunch of birds in a room with a racist and just like just watch what they learn.
Absorb, yeah. Watch, learn. All right, birds, get back over here. Oh, a pretty woman's walking by. What are you going to say to her? Oh!
It whistled.
It whistled. It's learning.
But this was the kind of technology that they were able to kind of up their game. Instead of wax figurines, they could have these robots. And then what else did they have that was popular around this time? It's a Small World ride, a dark ride that you just sit on a boat. They have these pumps pushing your boat along the track. It was one of their most popular rides. So they figured a giant attraction, you're in the dark, you're in the cool water, and they were going to have these robot pirates, and it was going to be amazing.
Also, I just love so much that there is a genre of rides called dark rides. Yeah. That kind of ride is called a dark ride, which just feels like a demon is supposed to come out at you at the end and be like, you've ridden the dark ride.
It's right, surprisingly mild for the name.
Yeah, that's true.
They're really going to base this on real pirates, and then they find out that real pirates suck.
Yeah, they all died of STDs.
Exactly. They were murderers and robbers, and they really thought it was going to be like the movies, where it's like, well, no, they made that up because it's movies. These were, you know, hired killers.
Like you said, Walt was horny for pirates, and he was just like, this is going to be so accurate. And they're like, right? Are you going to mention the rapes? And he's going to be like, kinda.
The thing is, yeah, that's not the part that they cut out. That's not the part they cut out. There's like a legitimately woman being like, no, no, in the ride.
If you go through the ride when it opened, there's a whole scene where they're like selling women and like chasing them while they're trying to get away.
Oh, for sure. When we get to the movies, we can talk all about the rape culture of the Pirates of the Caribbean films.
One thing that got me, because they obviously, the new movies came out and they did update over the years with the advancement of political correctness, but there is a scene where they're actually auctioning off women and chasing them around. And they change this scene, and instead of getting rid of it, they just make it so the pirates are literally hungry. So now they're being chased for food instead of sex. This is the only change they make to it.
Yeah, they just like put food in the women's hands, and they're like, they're chasing them for the food, as you can see.
Because they cook, and they're sluts. Women can be both.
I'm going to be honest. I did not notice the food part. I thought this was cannibalism. And I thought, I am amazed that I thought this was like, oh, I guess this is like too weird a fetish for it to be offensive. Like, we didn't know this was a thing.
Wait,
I guess
it's not
bad.
Okay. Rewind. Andrew, are you telling me that you thought that they changed it to the hungry lines without noticing that the food was added to the women robot? So you thought it was just like a guy chasing a woman threatening to eat her, which, wink.
That is, 100%. Look, I watched the video on this. Again, I haven't been on the ride. I watched the tape. I saw them chasing him around. I saw the adjustments where they made them look hungry and, you know, looking for food. And then I saw the women. I thought, oh, they're going to eat the women. End of thought process.
Pirates are crazy.
Yeah. This did not feel too off-brand to me. Listen, this was acceptable.
There is a cannibal scene in the second Pirates of the Caribbean film.
Right.
A big old
We'll get to the second Pirates of the Caribbean. We're still talking about the ride.
Stop trying to get ahead of yourself.
So look, here's my favorite ride part then. They hire these mannequin makers to build the actual animatronics. And they cannot get them to stop making the animatronics with dicks. They can't do it. And the woman that's hired to make the clothes, Alice Davis.
Just let me put it on.
They're not even going to see it. I want to know it's there.
It makes me feel better.
That was exactly like they thought their job was making mannequins. We got to make it so the clothes fit. She's like, cool, but I got to put the clothes on them. They're bolted to stuff. I already have to fit this around. They don't fit well with the clothes when there's a dick because we can't have kids seeing the dick. And they're like, fuck you, putting on the dick.
Putting on the dicks, a beautiful remake of Putting on the Ritz.
Yo ho ho, putting on the dicks. Look, you can't fault them for being uncompromising with their art.
I agree with Wen. Alice, live your best life, honey. I hope you'll have a closet full of animatronic dicks right now.
Like, she did not want to back down from this. She was just like, look, no, you hired me. okay? You came to me.
Well, no, Alice was the one trying to stop it because she was like higher up, and Alice was saying, I've got to fit the clothes around the dicks. And these mannequin makers that are like one-timers they brought in are like, look, I make mannequins. My mannequins got dicks. You deal with it.
This took a turn. See, I thought Alice was empowered because she wanted the dicks, but it turns out that she was getting unwarranted dicks all slapped onto these animatronics. And now I feel for her.
I would have absolutely been on Alice's side. If Alice was the one that wanted the dicks, it's like, yeah, go Alice. We believe in you.
I love that they were so well endowed that she's like, the clothes don't fit anymore.
Alice,
we said
Alice,
Walt Disney
Alice.
Was horny for pirates. Whoever was making the animatronics was super horny for pirates.
Way too into it. But, you know, they're like, they're bolted to stuff because they move. They shake around, so they can be bolted in like two or three different places, which means that it's hard to fit the clothes around them because it's not like you can just pull it on over them. But these mannequin makers, they're all in.
I'm sorry, I don't have one. Is that what it is like?
I mean, nailed it, really.
Just for you two in the morning? Yeah, you're just like, oh.
I mean, I'm constantly bolted to stuff, and yeah. People are like, "When your clothes don't fit, they don't." People. Don't
Alice.
Know. People
Alice
don't
pops
know.
Out.
We'll keep this in. We'll keep this in.
I would love it if this was a real life issue where it was like you have to choose: do you want to wear clothes or do you want to have a dick? Mm. You've got those choices. This is what humans deal with every day. Now.
Yeah, I know. I read the Bible.
Yeah. All right, so this is the basic of how they're building this. They build this amazing ride out of this, and that will forever be my favorite part. But October 31st, 1966, first boats go through, but it's 1967.
Spooky.
Yeah, I know. This was a weird release. Then April 19th, they have the actual Pirates of the Caribbean debut to the press. You know, general swashbuckling and, again, kidnapping women. This is part of the display, but now they've got real people. They want to kidnap everybody. It's a lot.
It becomes the most popular ride. And if you've ever ridden it, it really is a transporting experience. They have fireflies go in, like when you go in, like they have the smell of just like you being next to like a body of water. And I know we mentioned dark rides, and I guess we should kind of like go into a little bit more, but a dark ride is an indoor amusement ride on which passengers board guided vehicles and travel through specially lit scenes with animatronics and special effects. So it's like the most immersive kind of experience you can have. They really try to immerse you into a very fanciful idea of pirates and everything, but it's fun. There are cannons exploding around you. They get the smells right. They get the atmosphere right. If you look into the sky, they've painted the ceiling so it looks like clouds and lights are set up so it looks like they're traveling past you. It's a really cool experience, and they immediately are just like, we have something here. And when they open up Disney World, there's practical riots because they were like, oh, Florida's near the Caribbean. This isn't going to be cool and mysterious for them. And people are like, fuck you. Where's the pirate ride?
Give me the pirates now.
Yeah. I want to buy a lady.
Oh, God. I just want to chase her around for a while.
They don't mention this in any of the Disney history, but there was a time you could have bought a lady in the gift shop after the ride.
I just got a stupid hoodie. I did have a Pirates of the Caribbean ride hoodie. Me and my friends all bought matching ones in high school when we went.
No, the problem is they put it at the end. So you just buy that $17 churro when you've got like nothing left at the end.
I think probably like one of the most, like the coolest things about the ride to me is kind of lame, but it's so simple, but it just really like brings the energy up, which is there's a surprise little drop sort of at the beginning. That's all. And you're just like, whoa, you know, and like it's little and it's not that scary, but because you're not expecting it, then you're like, oh, I'm here now.
I do love that part because the ride kind of tricks you into thinking it's a ride rather than a show. It's just like, boom, you're dropping. You're like, where are the other drops going to come from? And they don't arrive.
Yeah, and then you're like, huh. I feel like there is one more. I think there is, but I can't, I like towards the end or something, maybe in the middle.
There might be, but there's no just like giant, like Splash Mountain kind of experience at the very end. It's just like you're going,
absolutely
you drop
not.
Like a little dip twice, and then they're like, goodbye. And you're like, and you leave happy, but also it's a little of a blue balls kind of experience.
That's what I was saying the first time I went when I was 6 years old.
Yeah, little Maggie just got off. It was just like total
blue balls. Yes. I was expecting more of a adrenaline rush, mother.
Wait, was that your voice as a child? Were you like a
like Audrey Hepburn?
Yeah, it's my voice now, but I went through lots of speech therapy to sound how I do now. But really inside it's this.
Yeah, just trying not to sound like Martin Prince from The Simpsons.
Exactly. I'm trying to do like a Sheldon from whatever that show is.
Young Sheldon, yes.
Yes, a young Sheldon, old Sheldon. What's the difference, people? It's Sheldon.
Classic Sheldon.
So let's get back to 1997 now, when they decide to redo this a bit. And the thing is, animatronics are still expensive, but General Motors' World of Motion closes. So they buy the animatronics from their first traffic accident scene and use these.
What?
Yeah, they use these to rebuild it. And this is when they redo the section where they're now chasing women for food that they're carrying, I just learned.
Oh, not just women for food.
Yeah, this is a revelation for all of us.
Great.
And then, of course, they redo it again in 2006 after the movies come out, and they actually get the actors from the films to come and voice some of these characters, and they add this new dimension to it.
2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. visiting Indeed each month, according to ComScore, total visits. So it's clear Indeed can help you get the quality hire you need. And that's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, this is a revelation for all of us. And then, of course, they redo it again in 2006 after the movies come out, and they actually get the actors from the films to come and voice some of these characters, and they add this new dimension to it.
Let's get into it. The ride, biggest hit in Disneyland, Disney World. People love this ride. So when the time comes, they're like, let's option this into a film. And basically, the idea would be, what kind of fucking movie do you think is here?
Right. And this is a thing that keeps happening. Like, remember when they did Battleship, the movie, and the whole thing was,
yes,
was just battleships, except at the end, they lay out a grid to defeat them because they have to tie it in. And I was like, guys, you can just make a movie about pirates. That's fine. This doesn't have to be a thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a slam dunk. Like, this is a perfect ride to do that for. And I think it's really like, I think the first Pirates of the Caribbean film is one of the best films, like, of my lifetime. It is such a tight script. It is so good. The music is amazing. The performances are amazing. The direction is incredible. And the little tie-ins to the ride are so subtle that I didn't notice them until I went on it again as an adult. And I was like, this is from the movie. I get it. Oh my God.
That's a good point. This is one where they actually do manage to have some, I mean, it's a standalone Pirates movie, but they find good connections. Everything is just a wink and a nod. And I feel like this is one of the few that actually does it well. They do find a way to make this a real connection.
Yeah, they actually did great job connecting the ride and the movie. Like, to take it to the fact that there's a scene in the ride where it's just like a skeleton steering a boat, and like it's supposed to just be like creepy imagery on the ride, and like the screenwriters, God bless them, saw that and was just like, oh, skeleton pirates, cool, let's do that.
This is a movie about skeleton pirates now.
And then like their next thought was, okay, every pirate movie is about searching for treasure, and then they were like, what if we did the reverse? What if they're trying to return treasure? And like, just those two things, ingenious.
So good. That, I mean, it is so tight. I mean, I could rave about it for the rest of the podcast.
I mean, we're going to rave about this first movie because this first movie is practically perfect.
Yes.
If you even look at just the script itself, the character of Jack Sparrow is not who he is in the film. Like, he is supposed to be a somewhat competent, like, pirate that's just kind of, like, going along. But is he like, they approach it more like a James Bond kind of character in the script. Johnny Depp comes in, and we'll get to Johnny Depp later, but he comes in, and he's like, what if I just play him as a fucking rock star? And it worked. Like, the character oozed charisma. It just came out through every pore in the guy's body. It's a perfect film. You got Geoffrey Rush as Barbossa, who is so fun. He chews the scenery so much that you would think that he was actually one of those pirates chasing the women holding food in the ride. Like, it's
an apple.
It's amazing.
No, they really do a fantastic job. And I think it built a world so well, where this is completely immersive, and you've got characters that you can believe in, you've got characters that balance each other, and you can see why it went on to build more, because you wanted more of this world. And I feel like they really did a fantastic job in that first one of creating something where you're like, there's so much depth in every part of it.
Yeah, and before we get into the here's where it went wrong of it all,
yeah,
and I know you guys will probably argue with me.
Don't.
I like...
Don't say it!
Pirates of the Caribbean 2 and 3. I like them.
I knew it. I saw it coming from a mile away.
If you watch them all back to back to back.
Which I did this week.
I did it in quarantine. Like, at the beginning of quarantine, I was just like, I strapped myself in and I was like, I have nowhere else to go. And me and my wife, Ashlyn, spent 3 nights. Boom, boom, boom. And each time I was like, this is why they make films.
Okay, so when I'm going to stop you right there, because my answer for where it all went wrong is them trilogizing it. And that's a moot point now, because we have, like, I'm sure some of our listeners are probably like, how many Pirates films are there? Because I was.
Right.
I was like, how many are
there?
We're about to be at 6.
Yeah.
So they trilogized it into 3 for absolutely no reason except for money. We all know that's the reason. And then there's 5, 4, 5, and now 6 coming up.
I am somewhere between you guys. I could enjoy Pirates 2 and 3 when they were on.
Well, me too.
Yeah, but that was about it. It was 4 and 5 was where it really got into trouble. I could see the, when you watch them in a row, the idea of, oh, it builds and it's still the world, except for the fact that I get tired of it too quickly because I still keep comparing to how good one was.
Do you know what they're doing? First of all, when I discovered that it was the same screenwriters for 1, 2, and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, which is insane, I was shook to my core, because the second and third one read to me as though they were like, this perfect pair of screenwriters wrote this movie. Can you try? And they were like, we'll just do the exact same thing that people did before us. But it's the same two guys who've written so many of my favorite films that are so formative for me as a child. Shrek, Aladdin, Road to El Dorado. Like, they wrote these films. Pirates 1, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. I saw that movie in theaters 12 times.
12? Wow.
Yes, there is kind of an excuse for this because I was living in Bahrain at the time, which is a very small country in the Middle East, and there's only a few movies that come out every year. And so it was in theaters for a full year. So I went like for fun a bunch of times, but then people would have their birthday parties and go see a movie and it would always be Pirates. But I was obsessed with it. I had like a Jack Sparrow costume. I was obsessed with the second one. I had the chest. I had like a box that was the chest that's Davy Jones' heart goes in. It was like a whole obsession for me.
I love these first three movies. I went to the midnight premieres of the second two. Davy Jones, to this day, one of the most impressive CGI characters ever made. The fact that you
That's
could put those
fact.
In movies now, and Davy Jones in 2006 looks better than almost any digital effect that has come out in the past 14 years. Like, people say, like, Thanos is so impressive. Look at Davy Jones. There's water. He's lighting a pipe and stuff with his tentacles, and it's all close-ups in the middle of the day. Like, usually you hide that shit in smoke and darkness. They put him in daylight, and they just say, look at him, motherfucker. Look at him in his eyes. You can see his eyes. You can see him get sad when someone hurts his feelings. That's so impressive. And you know why? It's because Gore Verbinski, who directed these first three movies, like, started in special effects, which means he planned every shot in advance to know where the special effects in this shot are going to go and how to light the scene properly so that special effects would merge well with the real life sets he was shooting on. Now, compared to something like that movie Doolittle that came out with Robert Downey Jr., that movie, the director did not plan any of those visual effects, and the visual effects artist had to fight him and be like, I can't put a polar bear on the screen. You didn't leave room for me to put a polar bear on the screen. Right. Like, that's how regular directors shoot. They're just like, oh, the special effects guys will add in the cool stuff later.
Not Gore.
Not Gore Verbinski. He planned every shot of the entire film to have the special effects not only be there, but look amazing when they were added. And that is why I'm going to say these first three movies are so incredibly put together. And I am not even talking about the score yet, because the score is one of the best film scores of all time. I would say it's probably the last iconic film score where every time a character has their own theme and you hear that theme and you're like, oh, that's that character. Tell me what you hear when you think of Thor. Exactly.
I got fucking nothing for Thor. I felt nothing. Yeah. The song Up Is Down from the third one, because I have all the soundtracks. I've got them memorized, baby. They're in my bone marrow. They're rushing through my veins. The song in the third one, when they're flipping the boat upside down, is one of the best film score songs of all time.
I'm a nerd. I will work to film scores, and the Pirates film scores
yes!
are incredible.
Yes. Ugh. Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's just, to me, comes down to story.
Fair. Fair. And I'm a moron.
Comes down onto story, baby. And we're gonna let's see here. They turned it into a trilogy, and the question is why? Well, we know why. It's because of money. We know that they did it because of money. They want money. All of the people want the money. But it's like, these people were like, okay, great, we've done this first film, it ties us up with a bow, it's beautiful. Now we're going to dive deeper into this and see more behind the curtain of all this craziness. And it is just repetitive. The characters are not compelling anymore. Like, they completely change without warrant, it feels like to me. Like, I'm like, okay, Elizabeth has swords now? Like, I want her to have swords, but like, what? When did she learn that?
She mentions that Will taught her. I will say, I was such a nerd, I like read the stories of which characters are best with swords in order.
No.
Yeah. That's like how I knew. Like, I read like, and like, that's not like an official thing, but I just read so much Pirates of the Caribbean stuff that for some reason I found a sword ability hierarchy list.
Incredible. Break it down.
Yeah, okay, so... God damn it, I'm doing this. So Will was number one. Will was the most talented swordsman. After him, it was Norrington.
Okay.
So after Norrington, it's Jack Sparrow. After Jack Sparrow, it's Davy Jones, who's a worse swordsman, but he can't die.
Okay, so if that's factored in...
Right, what are the metrics used here?
I don't know. Like I said, this wasn't official.
I need a chart for this.
But anyway, so the trilogy happens, and it's good.
Okay,
we'll give you good.
We can fight about whether or not they're amazing or perfect or lives up to the first one, but you can watch those three movies and be like, that was fun. I had a great time doing that.
Yeah. No, I'm solid on good. So where did it go wrong?
Here's where it went wrong. For some reason, someone got in their heads that the main character is and should forever be Jack Sparrow.
Right.
And I'm sorry, but that is insane.
This is supposed to be an absurd character. Also, one thing that always bothered me was in the first one, or in one of the early ones, someone asked, why is Jack like that? And they respond with, it's not about why. And that's accepted as the answer. The question was why. That was entirely what it was about.
What? Who's they? Who's, like, you're saying, like, the screenwriters?
No, one of the characters in the film, I think it was Elizabeth, says, why is Jack like that?
Oh.
And with the first mate, says, it's not about why. I was like, no, why? Why feels like a good question here. This is not a normal way to behave. I remember bringing it up to a friend, and they quoted his line. They said, it's not about why. And I was like, that's not an answer at all. I feel like we should get to know
BS.
Why.
That's the thing. He's a side character. He is. He's like the kooky comic relief. He is like a deus ex machina. He comes in, he just does his little thing, and then he's supposed to fuck off.
Right.
Because that's how the character is designed. Would you watch a movie called Genie? No, that would become so grating after a little bit.
And it did.
So it goes off the rails when they focus entirely on Jack Sparrow. We're going to especially focus on the fifth film, Dead Men Tell No Tales. By the way, just a side note that I left here since we're tying in the ride. When they built this ride in Tokyo, there wasn't a translation for Dead Men Tell No Tales, which is a line that you hear when you enter it. And they translate it to Dead Men Don't Have Mouths.
What?
That doesn't. Yes, they do.
But they do.
Exactly. So they had to talk to them and say, okay, we can't say that because they do. So they changed it to this kind of general, vague, abandon all hope kind of phrase instead. Because like, no, they have mouths. That makes zero sense.
There's got to be a way to translate when you're dead, you can't tell stories anymore. That I'm sorry. There's got to be a way.
I felt exactly
the
same
way.
And then they start the fifth film. And before the title screen, they have Captain Zalazar come on and say that you've got to relay this message for me. I'm leaving you alive. Because he could, might as well have turned to the camera and said, dead men tell no tales. And it was like, this is one of those scenes where you nudge your partner and say, that's the name of the film. And they immediately break up with you. It was...
Did that happen to you, Bob?
I mean, I feel like I do it every time it happens. So far, she's with me.
Were you watching Lord of the Rings? And he was like, between the two towers. And she was like, oh, no.
Yeah. So
I'm going.
So Zalazar says this, and it's like, that is not what it means because you're talking right now. So let's start to explain the plot here.
The whole thing with death in them is insane. They're like, Barbossa is back, but we have to go get Jack, but we can't save Elizabeth's dad because he's at peace. And it's like, what?
I know.
What are the rules?
It's so convoluted.
I want to go back into Gore Verbinski, like I said earlier, directed those first three. And they look amazing. Everything looks like it was shot on location. Everything has depth, okay? If you watch 4 and 5, like originally I was just like, oh, these were cheap cash-ins that they did. 4 was the most expensive movie ever made at the time. And it's the cheapest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And also... 5 looks insanely cheap.
Oh, I'm going to be insanely nitpicky over this one because the estimations are $230 to $320 million on this. They built a world. They've set the date in 1751, and the historical inaccuracies are rampant. And I'm going to pull back on some of the ones that I feel like I get it. Up until 1747, the British Navy didn't actually have uniforms. I get why they gave them uniforms in the earlier movies. They wanted to create a vibe. I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is the stuff where, like, you could have just Googled it and found out this didn't exist yet.
Oh, no. What are they? I can't wait for this. God.
Andrew, please.
Yes. Here it comes. Here
Go
it comes.
Off.
Okay. Let's start with this. It was so random. They're going to kill Jack at one point, and they're going to use the guillotine. They said it's a new invention by the French. The guillotine has not been invented yet by the French. There are precursors.
Oh,
the term guillotine doesn't come out for another almost 40 years. And Jack says, oh, I love the French. They invented mayonnaise, which they hadn't done yet.
He could have have said another thing. It didn't have to be mayonnaise.
The French invented so much.
Yeah.
Pissing.
There is so tongues. Much stuff. So look, I'm going to go these as we hit different points, because honestly, I could do the whole podcast on this.
You can do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's start explaining the actual plot of the story here.
So basically, what we want to get into, it feels like this movie, somebody told them beforehand, hey guys, Jack doesn't work as a main character. People like having Will and Elizabeth, the two main characters from the first three movies, around. So they shot literally what has to have been 3 minutes of total footage of those characters to put them into this film. It's like that they like shot the whole movie, realized that Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley like had an afternoon free, shot some stuff with them, and just spliced them in throughout. They're not factors in this movie, but we find out that Will's son,
Henry,
who is going to become the main character, is trying to free his dad from the Davy Jones curse that he got at the end of the third movie. He has all like the barnacles and stuff on his face. This should only be done, according to the lore of the movies, if he stopped doing his job, which he's doing. So we're breaking that
rule. It basically felt like he was just super depressed and stopped taking care of himself. Like when you see a guy is like, oh, you haven't shaved in like 2 weeks, bud. It was that kind of thing. But again, this was not the lore you set up.
Oh, I hate when writers break their own rules. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
Dude only gets laid once every 10 years. So yeah. I understand the depression in that regard.
And he can't make his swords no more. He loves them.
He does love those swords. It's a big plot point that
he
fucking
loves his
swords. So his son becomes obsessed with the idea of freeing his dad, which can only be done with the Trident of Poseidon. God, I hate this movie.
This is where they do the thing that basically they did in Fast and the Furious 2, where the first one, it was like, we're going to drive some cars and steal some stuff. And the first one, it was like, we're going to sail some boats and steal some stuff. And by the fifth one, they were like, we're going to rob God.
Yes. Yes. It's so good.
And the escalation is insane.
That is so true. And no better for women. Every single time, no matter how many years pass, they're always just like, take off your clothes. Every time. It's like, what?
Every movie has like a very horny pirates thing that they're implying that they're going to rape a woman. And it's like, you don't have to do that joke every film.
You don't have to do it ever. And also sometimes it's not the pirates. It's just the world. It's awful. It's awful.
Like, if you're going to be historically accurate, don't put mayonnaise in your film.
And there were more women. Like, they were there, fuckers.
And also, like, women pirates, by the way, actually is historically accurate.
It's a huge thing, yeah.
They can fit this in historically in powerful roles like they originally did with Elizabeth. But as soon as she leaves, they stop doing that. For the most part. They have one here, Corina Smith, who they actually introduce as an intelligent woman. And because of that, she's called a witch. Now, we know from our previous episode, they're not doing that at this time. This is after the witch trials. In fact, 1735, they passed a law in England saying that you can't call someone a witch or claim they've done witchcraft. You, in fact, can be punished up to a year in prison. And they're on an island, St. Martin, which, again, in accuracy, was actually owned by the French and Dutch. North half French, south half Dutch.
Wait, that's a big one.
It is.
Do they say St. Martin in the film?
They do. And the British had a port there, but they make it British-owned, which would suggest that the laws apply there, which would suggest they can't hang anyone for being a witch.
Yeah, that's actually a really huge... Just pick another island, my dude.
Yeah, there were so many options. The British were everywhere at this point.
They're still down there.
Yeah, they are all over.
Grand Cayman.
Yeah, they've got everything. There was no reason to pick this island. In fact, the other port that they use in a number of the movies was destroyed. They use this as a base in a number of the films, but it was never rebuilt properly.
Oh, Port Royal.
That's the one. Thank you. Was destroyed. It wasn't rebuilt properly. I mean, they kept trying, but it didn't work. So Corina Smith is our intelligent character here. She's wonderful. She's an astronomer. I always like when they have a strong woman character, although I never think they do it correctly because they always try and be like, look, it's a strong woman, instead of just letting her be that.
It's because the assumption is that the rest of them aren't.
Exactly.
So that's why strong female characters are garbage. Ugh.
Right. So it always just makes you slightly angry. It's like, I want to just root for her, but we can tell there's subtext.
That's actually a great way of putting that.
It is. So Corina, when we're introduced to her, is she's being asked to confess, and she uses her confession for an exposition dump. She confesses she's not a witch. She's a woman of science. She survived on her own with only a diary from her father that she never knew, and she is on a quest for the truth of who she is. These are all quotes. This is what she says when she's asked for a confession for witchcraft.
I'm on a quest.
This was a 30-second exposition dump where the guy had to be like, cool, do you not know what confession means?
So there's a big escape scene, as there always are in these films. There's always a giant, cool opening escape, and this is a bad one. This one is not fun. They manage to save her. They save Jack. Will Turner's son is also there. They all make their getaway.
There are actually two escapes. This first one is the absolute best. The only reason I'm going back to just giving forward to this was because all the inaccuracies were in the middle. First, she goes to try to buy a chronometer, which we know from our Titanic episode also didn't exist yet.
They were still using dog magic at the time, I believe.
Right. And in the 6 years later, when it would exist, you couldn't just go and buy one. But the place she goes to buy it has a giant telescope. And the man says no woman has ever touched his Herschel. He could say telescope because telescopes existed. The Herschel telescope didn't exist for another 20 years.
Wow.
And also, it wasn't called the Herschel. It was one telescope. In fact, the 40-foot one wasn't for like another 40 years. So someone Googled what are some telescopes called, and they put the word in, and it was completely out of frame. Then we get to the part where they're all held together. They get incorrect the time period of the guillotine, the mayonnaise, and basically everything else. Also, the laws of physics during their escape. Everything is wrong with this. But as Wen said, a massive dramatic escape where the best part, again, is just the theme song. It's fantastic every time it plays, but that's it.
It's so good. It's so good. It's a Pavlovian response that I thought I was having fun, and then I remembered that this movie was bad.
Right.
Do you guys remember when the Mythbusters did an episode about pirates?
No, what happened?
They did one with when that super dope plan of Will and Jack Sparrow are hiding under the boat, and then they pop up and they go underwater and they hold the boat with the air under the water with them.
Yeah.
That's like super impossible. Like, it's...
That had to have been impossible. They would have not floated up immediately.
Yeah, it's so heavy. It's so heavy to keep that much air and that pressure. You would not be on the ground, like down. You'd be floating up super high.
So they do the escape, and their plan is get Poseidon's trident. But at the same time, the person that is coming after them is Captain Salazar, who apparently it was a member of the Royal Navy, of the Spanish Navy, who has a vendetta against Jack Sparrow, who is portrayed by Johnny Depp with like the de-aging like effects that they're able to do. So like he looks,
it was so creepy.
So like an action figure of Jack Sparrow as a child, pretty much, is what we're looking at.
You know, it was so weird. They didn't just make him young. They made him look like Dobby. Like,
yeah,
his thinness was all
so
disproportionate. It was, how old are we supposed to think he is? Is the bottom half of him a baby? Is that what's happening here? It was insane.
They made him incredibly young, but also like did this thing where like he does a really cool and smart plan. And then you're just like, why is this Jack Sparrow not in the rest of the film?
Right. He is just an idiot now. In fact, the reason Salazar escapes, when we see him in the beginning and he does that dead men tell no tales line, he says he can only escape with Jack's compass. We think he needs to get the compass. It turns out if you betray the compass, your worst fear comes true. And his worst fear is Salazar coming back, even though he didn't know this was a possibility. So Salazar doesn't need to get the compass. All that has to happen is Johnny Depp has to trade it for alcohol. And suddenly, in the most anticlimactic scene, Salazar is just released and hunting them while they hunt for the trident.
I feel like so many of these movies are them just going like, what else can we make this compass do? Like, the compass gets like a new ability in every movie.
I feel like that's why I feel like it starts going wrong earlier than you do, one, because I feel like it's not just the compass. It's like everything from the first one feels like they're like, oh, guys, we did this really good like bit. Let's do the bit 7,000 more times. And like literally with bits, but also with the compass, or like we're going to justify X, Y, and Z. And it's like, I didn't have a question about that. In fact, you did a really good job coming up with the original story. Why don't you come up with another original story? You know, instead of being like, this compass, what do we got? Let's bring someone back from the dead in a different way. Let's have their undead ghost sailors, but they're different because these ones look like a sea anemone instead of a skeleton.
Yeah. They go from being skeletons to like fish, plant life beings, to zombies, and to being ghosts that were blown up, so they're like missing parts of their faces. Like that's like their big thing, is like a ghost army. And like, here's the thing. How do you waste Javier Bardem like this.
How? Agreed.
Like, how great was he in, like, Skyfall or No Country for Old Men? He's terrifying. And yet in this movie, he's so boring.
He is. And laughably unscary. Even his most intimidating scenes. Like, you could just say, tell you what, we're going to take off all of the CGI. Just let you go do whatever you want. It's going to be terrifying. But instead, everything they add to him just takes away from the character build.
Andrew, I want you to hit me with more historical accuracies. I want to kind of jump around, but like, there's not enough in this plot to make me go like, we could spend a whole episode on this plot. It's just bad.
Let's skip ahead to like Barbossa then. We see him in his cabin. This is not how it's done. The captain of the cabin does not have a significantly nicer cabin. In fact, the captain of even a pirate ship is democratically elected, and they get the same share as everyone else. The quartermaster decides it, not them. And so not only is this, he's, you know, laced in gold, but also he has a private three-piece orchestra playing for him, a song that's not written for another 28 years.
No. What song is it?
He's playing a song from Mozart. At this point, Mozart has not even been born.
I love that they stuck a year on it just so you could be like, oh yeah, motherfuckers, let's do this.
I know. And they didn't say it in the film. I actually looked this up because apparently they did a comic book of this story and they said 1751. And I thought, just no, bitch, let's go. I got this. So, it was way too much. So they've got a lot. Obviously, the Jolly Roger is flown occasionally. This is a skull and crossbones flag, but also every pirate had their own flag. And also the merchant ships from England did not fly the Union Jack. This is seen everywhere. It's just, again, you spent $300 million on this. Why would you not look some of this stuff up?
I agree.
Jack asks for, he wakes up from a dream and says spaghetti wolf. The word spaghetti doesn't exist for another 100 years.
That one is my favorite by far. What? Also, can you imagine living in a hellscape where they don't have spaghetti yet? You kidding me?
I mean, it's Italy. They've got pasta, but that's another problem. They say Italy. The word Italy doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
These are separate states. It's Italia, but it would very rarely be said then. And the coat of arms that they use, everything that they use in terms of flags, in terms of decoration. Here's the thing with pirates in general. Most of the pirate culture that we see in movies comes from 1950 when they made Treasure Island and the portrayal of Long John Silver. That was it. Every pirate voice you hear after that, the R's, the accent, it came from that film. This was not a historical thing. There were things that are historically accurate, but debatable. Like the eye patch is one that I find interesting because there's a lot of debate as to why this would actually be worn. And movies tend to skew towards these dramatic portrayals that cannon fire is a huge issue. Would splinters from cannon fire be easy to get splinters? But the thing is, whenever they're depicted with one eye. If it splinters, you could easily lose both eyes. The other depiction is that you're quickly moving above and below deck from light to dark. If you have one eye prepared for darkness, you can switch to battle quicker when you're looking at ships. These are two theories that are touted often, but neither is particularly likely. One that is incredibly more likely is just the fact that in order to get your bearings, you had to stare at the sun through a sextant.
Oh, no.
You were going to lose your eyesight in one eye, and you weren't going to do it in both eyes. This would make a lot more sense. And again, I'm okay with some of the stuff hyping up for drama, especially when we don't know for sure. We know pirates wore eye patches. We don't have an exact reason, but it was one of those things where this is really cool history to dig into. On the first one you created a world, if you're not doing that anymore, if you're breaking all your own rules, why not go for some cool history stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's not about the fact that this is a fantastical world. It's about like adhering to the right.
Exactly.
And it's not like you and the viewer are watching this like, well, some people, you know.
Yeah.
Like, Andrew are watching this going like, well, that's not right. Mozart's not born yet. And like, it just is really interesting. Like there's something really satisfying about when it is historically accurate, you know, like I'm not pissed that it's wrong. It's just like when it's just better when it's right. You know?
Exactly. And I honestly would care a lot less if they said, look, we're going to make our world and we're going to stick to the rule. Like the same reason I have no problem with Superman being able to fly, because you know what? You said Superman can fly and he can always fly.
True.
You stuck with it. I'm cool with it. It's here. Suddenly you gave us a date and then you got all of it wrong.
Yeah. I love that. It seems like most of the issues are that they stole things from the future of that world. But I love that some of them are in the past. It's like they couldn't even like,
right.
They're like, I don't know. This is an old thing. Guillotine. I don't throw it in. But, you know, like, So I love that. And witches to me, actually, in hindsight, I didn't bump on it at all when I saw it in the movie. But now that you say that, I'm like, yeah, wait, no, that's like 200 plus years old. Like that's at that point. Like that's how they were doing that so long ago.
The last hanging of a witch was 39 years before that, I believe.
Yeah, and that's late.
Yeah.
God, I love this podcast. I like listening to my own podcast like I'm a listener. Like, I'm just like, man, Andrew's really on fire on this one.
An interesting podcast.
So let's get back to actually explaining some of the film here. They're going after the Trident. They've got Barbossa, who is incorrectly dressed and has far more money than he should. And they are going after the Trident. Well, again, basically, I want to explain the movie, but all I can think is it's the exact same thing.
There's a MacGuffin. They're going after it.
Yeah.
There's a ghost pirate or a supernatural pirate that's chasing them.
There's a love story, a strong woman.
Yeah, there's a strong woman and guy who is a Turner, I guess.
Baby Bill Turner.
Right. We're also going to tie in here that we find out that Karina is Barbossa's daughter.
Mm. Which is done in like the most hack way of just like.
It is. Here's one other thing that just bothered me randomly. They discover this because she has, she says her name is Karina. He has a tattoo of Karina on his arm. She says it's named after the brightest star. It is not a brightest star. It's a constellation that you can't even see in the northern hemisphere most of the time.
Yeah, wait. I was like, wait. That one doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Exactly. So she sees Barbossa's tattoo and she's like, oh my God, he's my dad. The only thing she has from him is this diary, which is Galileo's diary, but is referencing this trident. And this one just bothered me because Galileo was all science.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we know the "and yet it moves" line was apocryphal. Most likely didn't happen because they would have killed him. But he was science, and instead they have him on the hunt for the Trident. It bothered me.
Like, if it was like a sci-fi kind of a plot, I'd be like, ooh, that's a cool conspiracy. But it's about a sea god. Like, that's just not, I don't associate.
There was no need for
it. Yeah. I don't know. There's like someone else you could have chosen besides Galileo.
Right. And they said it and basically said, because he invented the telescope. And it was like, I mean, yeah, basically he made it better. I mean, I'm okay giving him that part. It was one of those, let's just shoehorn in absolutely everything we can here. Here's a name that we know. We want to compare her to someone very smart. We've got Galileo's diary, which apparently Barbossa stole off a ship. So he figures out she's his daughter. And it lasts for like 20 seconds before he dies. It was like, who was this for?
I don't know. Feels like a first draft.
Well, here's the thing. They wanted to have Barbossa in the movie, and Geoffrey Rush was just like, I'm not doing these anymore. So they're like, let's put in stakes so that he could sacrifice himself. And like, it just, I don't care anymore. Barbossa was like a scene-chewing villain. I don't want him to have a redemption arc with his long-lost daughter who was introduced this film.
Yeah, this just so recently.
If he had just said earlier, like, I don't have my daughter, or anything like that, or anything before, like, if it was introduced before. And also, I don't like the fact that this is Will's adult son. It just, like, he's like 20 or something now. And it's just like, that ages all the characters. Why did the characters not age 20 years? Like, it's such an insane thing that drives me nuts.
When Barbossa realizes she's his daughter, Jack is tied up on the ship and overhears this. And her name is Karina Smith, S-M-Y-T-H. And he says, Smith, that's an unusual name. Piecing together that who her mom was. He's never seen it written. S-M-Y-T-H is a bit uncommon of a spelling in England during this time period. But Smith has been around as a long time because anyone who was a Smith.
In fact, he uses it as in the first one right away. He says his name is Smith. He pretends.
What a dumb thing to pretend. So they find Poseidon's trident. There's a big battle. Barbossa sacrifices himself. Jack breaks the trident, releasing all the curses of the sea. So there's now no magic, which, fine, I get it. I mean, you introduced another god of the sea a few movies ago, and now we're like, no, but this is the real god of the sea. But who? Okay, fine. I don't care. I stopped caring. He breaks the trident. All the curses are done. Will and Elizabeth run to each other on a seashore and kiss, and you're like, oh yeah, them from the movies I liked before. They even play their lover's theme from the earlier movies. And I'm like, this is just you trying to emotionally manipulate me, and I'm not falling for it again.
Yeah.
And then the movie ends. There's fucking credits. There's a post-credit scene of Will and Elizabeth waking up in bed, and Davy Jones is there all of a sudden, and then it just cuts to black, and you're like, what the fuck was that setting up for?
Why? Why?
It was like, we're letting you know we're gonna make you do this again.
They did the whole setup for this movie. The whole promotions was that it's the last Pirates movie.
I know.
Why did it have a post-credit stinger for
Insane.
A sequel where you're saying the villain in the new one is the villain from the old one?
Ones.
Basically, they're telling us to go watch the third movie again. That is all that accomplished.
Oh, it makes me so tired because the first movie, and you could argue the second and third as well, like they're so good. You did it. You made it. It's so beautiful. And this franchise dies for me in the saddest way, which is not with the bang, with a whimper. It's so slowly. I told you guys, I saw that movie 12 times in theaters, right? I had like hoodies and I had a bunch of shit. I had all that shit for that movie because I loved it so much. And I didn't even see the fifth one. I was like, oh, there's a fifth one? I don't know. You know, like me, like right. who loved it, who saw your movie that many times. Like it just, you're just squeezing my emotions. Like one was saying, emotionally manipulating me, repeating and repeating over and over again, trying to take my money. And it just slowly deteriorates in just the death of art.
I mean, it's just crazy because, you know, Gore Verbinski, I'm shouting him out so much because those first three movies look so good. And these last two, the fourth and the fifth, look so incredibly cheap while being some of the most expensive films ever made. Like they like built these entire sets and whatnot for them rather than shooting on location. And it just looks like someone built all these sets. It looks so cheap. I can see the plywood. I see the screws. I see the intern who's just trying to touch up the building on this. I just don't like how cheap it looks. And Johnny Depp is clearly phoning it in these last two movies to the point that he actually had an earpiece where somebody was reading him his lines in the fifth one, apparently.
Ooh, no.
I remember seeing the thing where he pays someone like $200,000 to yell nonsense in his ear so he could act more purely.
What?
He kept on feeding him the lines too?
Allegedly, he had an earpiece where somebody was feeding him the dialogue as he went. And I have no problem believing that because he's so clearly over it.
Yeah.
There's like a weird theme in the fifth one of Jack being a washed up alcoholic. And I'm just like, yikes.
Oh yeah.
And now he's probably not going to be in the sixth one. You see that they're taking him off most likely?
Yeah, I see they're probably doing Margot Robbie in there.
I didn't see that. I saw that they might do like a prequel.
Yeah, Margot Robbie's in talks to do the new Pirates of the Caribbean. But if we're going to focus on the movies that already do exist and are there, I just want to say one thing. The fact that these movies fell off the rail so bad, it has affected the ride itself. We're going back to the very beginning. They added Johnny Depp to the ride. And now knowing the history of Johnny Depp and all of his struggles and all of his things that he's done and his court battles that he's going through, I'm not saying that I can make a legal determination of guilty or not guilty, but he is all throughout the ride, okay? Could you imagine if you got on It's a Small World and O.J. Simpson just pops up every few scenes?
Yeah, you get to France and like it's like Louis C.K. and he's like, hey! Yeah.
Like you're just like, I don't want him here. I got on this ride for escapism and you're putting this guy in my face and I don't like it anymore.
Man, I mean, at first, obviously way before realizing that he's this terrible person, it looks like.
We know Johnny Depp to be litigious, so I really appreciate the way we're couching these terms, but all very much agree that this was... that putting him in has taken away so much here. And we very much enjoyed seeing him go from this next one.
I'm not saying he did it. I'm saying how it makes me feel. Okay.
Exactly.
That's how I'm going to crouch this.
And we cannot be sued over that.
He's apparently not going to do the new Pirates. He got kicked off of the new Fantastic Beasts movie.
Which is the next episode I would like to do with you guys.
Yes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
We could definitely do the Harry Potter. We're going to do Harry Potter.
We're going to do that right now.
But
and take a break and back.
They're going to replace him with Mads Mikkelsen, who is insanely fuckable.
Oh my God, he's so beautiful. One, yeah. You know, he's the wax figure of a pirate that I would definitely put a penis on.
Bringing it back, the That's callbacks. That's why we get pros in here. This is why we get pros on this podcast. This is how we treat you guys.
I want that to become a line so bad. When someone is fuckable, that's the new...
Well, now that's an animatronic I would put a penis on.
There we go.
God, but yeah, Mads Mikkelsen's apparently going to replace him as Grindelwald. Allegedly, he's like on the top of the list of what they're like circling around. And once again, mwah, chef's kiss, beautiful casting. But yeah, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies are just fantastic films. They got railed into the ground and then they put those bad aspects into the ride. So now the ride is not only problematic because of like pirates were rapists, but it's problematic because like you have a guy accused of really bad things who just pops out of a barrel every now and then and waves at you. And you're like, well, I don't need him here.
Absolutely.
Mm-mm. And right after that drop, too, you've already had a drop.
So this is where it went wrong with the Pirates of the Caribbean ride films. However, we do have a section in this called In Their Defense, where one of us has to defend the indefensible. Now, guests usually get first crack at this. Maggie, do you want to try to defend this or do you want to defer?
To defend what element of this?
The last two Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
I will. I will say, Kaia Scodelario, who plays Karina, is incredible. And I'm glad that she's working and that she has a big franchise and she deserves it.
Fair.
I will actually be okay with that. Yeah, no, that feels reasonable. She, I mean, especially given the role that she was here, where she added some depth to it in an incredibly shallow movie. And I watched it and thought, oh, I'd like to see her in more stuff. I'm glad she has the opportunity.
Effie from Skins. Watch Skins. She's really messed up in that show.
But apparently insanely good. So we can pull one actor out and say she did a great job. And you know what? She got a paycheck. She was in a movie that was seen the world over by some people. I watched this later as a rental. She got the paycheck. She was seen the world over. And you know what? Hopefully they find a place for her in the franchise moving forward. So I'm okay with that. I think that's a solid In Their Defense.
Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, honestly, I'm surprised because we have discussed some horrible stuff. But this was one of the hardest In Their Defense because there was nothing you could point to where it's like, oh, but at least this, other than her, it was just everything felt like it was taking away from something good. That was a hard one.
It definitely seems like, I'm going to say this and then this will be my last big piece on it. The last two Pirates of the Caribbean movies feel like fan fiction of the first three Pirates of the Caribbean.
In fact, I have a quote. Oh my God, I want to find it. I was looking on my work laptop about like this quote. Here it is. I found it. Okay. The filmmakers cited the series' first installment, The Curse of the Black Pearl, as inspiration for the script and tone of the film.
So it was fan fiction.
That is in Dead Man Tell No Tales, which is the most recent one. And it's like, yeah.
That's insane. Yeah.
No, that's what it is. That's what a sequel is always.
I just love that they're like, one of their big points was like, did you see the first Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah. I would say it's like a big inspiration for this one. So that's where we're at. Guys, we gotta go watch that movie.
That's insane to like try to be like, okay, I think what we want this to feel like is if it was a sequel to Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes! Yes! The filmmakers cited the series' first installment as inspiration for the script and tone of the film. What?
That is insane. I have never heard that one. That's just defining what sequels are. That is incredible.
And y'all want to know the most fucked up thing? If there's a six Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm going to watch it.
I mean, yeah.
I like pirate movies. If there's a Western that comes out, I'm going to go see it. I like Westerns, okay? Not everything can be a superhero movie, okay? I have my diet full of superhero movies. I want other big blockbusters. And if you're telling me that there's going to be a six Pirates of the Caribbean where they're like, clean slate, here's like all the fun stuff that you like before, but like without all the stuff that kind of makes you feel icky, I'm going to watch it because I love swashbuckling.
I honestly felt like I had an easier time defending the actual sinking of the Titanic than this film. That one was not that challenging.
Jack Sparrow should not be a main character. It's just,
oh, yeah. It's so sad. So hard.
That was a reasonable point, was that, you know what? I'm going to see it. I am. I'm not going to feel good about myself, but I'm going to watch it.
I'm a huge hypocrite. I will see the sixth one. Disney, expect $11 in 2025.
Well, I think that covers it. We covered the good in the actual Pirates of the Caribbean ride, the good in the first movie, and depending on who you ask, the first three movies.
Me or Maggie, depending on who you ask.
If you ask me, it's one.
And then where it went so terribly wrong in Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, the fifth movie, and all of the historical accuracies, which I hope you all felt my rage over that. It was absolutely uncalled for, but it was there.
There's been more furious anger in this podcast episode than like all the ones on murder and like defraudment of the government and people.
We covered the witch trial, actual murders, and it was like, okay, but and this one, it was like, no.
But like, did they make me feel like bored by pirates?
No.
Oh, absolutely incredible.
God.
This one was fun. This was great. This was Maggie, a lot of fun. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
Damn straight. That's what we like to hear.
Yes, I had a great time. I just, boy, can't wait for that sixth pirate movie.
I know. We're going to bring you back for that one.
No, hopefully then it's where it went right.
Yeah.
Where it went right. The sixth pirate.
New podcast.
The best.
But yes, Maggie, thank you so much for joining us. Maggie Smith, a cast member of The Quest We Can Do and a writer-performer for Make It Up Media. She is absolutely fantastic. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, if you like hearing us rant, if you like hearing us rave, if you like everyone on a Zoom call staring at me like I'm insane because I'm making wild hand gestures that none of you at home can see, please like, subscribe, leave a review, 5 stars it. If you don't want to do those things, don't do the alternative of writing a bad review or fewer stars. We really appreciate you listening. Please come back next week. We're going to have a good time. Maggie, thanks for joining us. And Andrew, see you next week, man. This is always the best part of my week.
Always mine too. Thank you very much, both of you. And yeah, I'll see you next week, Gwen.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.